It's that time again. The time again when you hear Bob Seger play. And you're like, why does he even bother doing this each and every week? He's rambling, trambling, talking about Bob Seger. Well, not really. I never talk about Bob Seger because I don't really know a lot about Bob Seger. He's got a bunch of hits and stuff. He's still here on classic rock radio, if such a thing even exists. I guess he's from Detroit, that Michigan thing going on. He's got a Michigan thing going on. I don't know why I'm doing his voice. I'm doing some prep today because I have an interview with an interesting cat. His name is Brad Bellucci, and he has a book out called The Six Pack, On the Open Road in Search of WrestleMania. But he's not really looking for WrestleMania. The book really is about the Iron Sheik. And that time in 1983, in December of 1983, when the Iron Sheik defeated WWF. Then it was the WWF. He defeated WWF champion Bob Backlund, who had been champion for, I think, about 6 years. He beat him, put him in the camel clutch, and, you know, instead of tapping out or getting pinned, Vince McMahon had it scripted so Bob Backlund's manager could throw the towel in. Spoiler alert, this was 40 years ago, almost 41 years ago, 40 years ago, in December of 1983. And shortly thereafter, the Iron Sheik surrendered the World Heavyweight Championship of the WWF to, which is now the WWE, so he surrendered it to Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan ushering in the era of Hulkamania, which reigned over the World Wrestling Federation, now World Wrestling Entertainment, for almost a decade, off and on, occasionally. But I can't wait to do this kind of interview. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let me tell you, the good American, the smart American, I can't do Iron Sheik. I only know Iron Sheik from being on the Howard Stern Show. The fucking Howard Stern Show. Be Brian Blair is the fucking cocksucker. And that's the way he was. I last lived in Fayetteville, Georgia, the Iron Sheik. And this is an interesting book, and I can't wait to talk to the guy. You know, the last time I saw wrestling, not the last time, the very first time I saw wrestling live, WWF. Was in Elmira, New York, at the Southside High School Gymnasium. This was January 17th, 1983, almost 12 months before Hulk Hogan, well, not Hulk Hogan, 12 months before the Iron Sheik won the belt from the ultimate babyface, Bob Backlund. And you watch those old matches, man, especially matches like that that would, you know, they could go an hour. They always had one or two falls or whatever, but they really did a lot of grappling. It was interesting. So this is the lineup. And by the way, it was Jeff was there. Jeff Leboff from Radio Labyrinth proper. Our friend Stu, who's been on Radio Labyrinth to talk about the time his dad took him to see Muhammad Ali train in Western Pennsylvania. And then Stu's dad, he drove and we all went. And there weren't very many matches, but here's what we had. We had Tony Garea defeating Baron Mikhail Skikluna. I can't say the last name. Salvatore Bellomo defeated Swede Hansen. Eddie Gilbert defeated the Destroyer. Don Morocco defeated Kurt Hennig. And when Don Morocco entered in the ring, Stu punched him in the back. Now, Stu was probably 13. Not quite 13. He was 12. Punched him right in the back. And Morocco turned around and like yelled at him. And then Rocky Johnson defeated Buddy Rose. You know, I don't recall. I've seen The Rock wrestle at least six times in my life. I haven't been to wrestling in forever. Certainly haven't seen The Rock wrestle in forever. But I saw The Rock a bunch of times at the Georgia Dome and a couple times at Phillips Arena or whatever the hell it's called now. Rocky Johnson, of course, is dad, so I don't remember, I don't recall that I've, you know, I saw it, but I don't recall seeing him or remembering that I got to see Rocky Johnson, who, of course, is The Rock's dad. And then Jimmy Snuka. I saw Jimmy Snuka. He defeated Ray Stevens via a countout, but we got to see Jimmy Snuka. This is, I think it's post, when Jimmy Snuka first came into the WWF back then, WWE, he was kind of a drooling mess. They billed him as some sort of savage from, where are they all from, those guys? Those guys are all from, like, Polynesia. And, you know, he couldn't speak English. He was like, they found him in the jungle, whoever his manager was. The guy who had a little sideshow. And I could look it all up, but I don't really feel like it. I can remember what the guy looks like, Buddy Rose or something like that, Buddy Rose's corner. Because there was Piper's Pit that came after. And let's see. Buddy Rose's Corner. I'm going to Google. Because I want to know for sure if I can remember. Buddy Rose. Now, there's Playboy Buddy Rose. No, it's not him. Playboy Buddy Rose looked like a fat chick, though. He kind of looked, yeah, he did look like a fat chick. And he had boobs and everything like a guy, like a woman. I'm going to Google it, though. Who was Jimmy Snuka's manager? Now, this was at first. When he first came in, let's see. He was, okay, Lou Albano brought him in. Lou Albano brought him in. And Buddy Rogers, that's who it was. Buddy Rogers. Superfly Snuka. That was the draw that night. And Buddy Rogers was his manager. He's the one that took over from... When he came in with Lou Albano, he was just kind of a drooling idiot. Lou Albano, remember, had the rubber bands pinned to his face, but was awesome. An entertaining manager who never bothered to wear a shirt. All these guys, you know, these fat guys would just wear their shirts open. Rubber bands hanging from every nipple. But Jimmy, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, you know, he did a turn. He went from heel to babyface, or maybe he was an anti-hero. I don't know. He won the match over Ray Stevens. And then that night, I think he beat up a police officer and a woman and a dog and was arrested someplace near Elmira, New York, because it was in the Star Gazette, the newspaper, the next day. And I was like, oh, this guy's kind of a badass, kind of a jerk. I met Jimmy Snuka twice. Outside of wrestling, I used to work at a restaurant called Bob Evans, was a manager. I usually worked the night shift, closing down the restaurant. I was a first assistant or second assistant or whatever. That was the hierarchy, second assistant, first assistant, and then general manager. I was never general manager. Didn't aspire to that. So anyhow, we had a bar in the front. Like you would walk in and you could sit down. There was a smoking section. And then there was a non-smoking section. And then at the bar, you could smoke. And the bar looked, you know, was just sat there with stools and stuff. So Jimmy came in with this guy and sat down. And there were a lot of people. The Ramones came in there. I got to meet all the Ramones when they were still alive. And I used to have a Bob Evans placemat signed by all the Ramones, but I sold that on eBay. I still have the comment card that Joey filled out.
Hey, you ought to have more food for diabetes, people. You should have more food for diabetics, you know. But the sausage, the vegetarian sausage is pretty good, and these pancakes was good. Yeah, the oatmeal pancakes was very tasty.
And he put his phone number on there, which meant every time I got drunk and it was within reach, I would call the number. Anyway, Jimmy Snuka came in. Oh, that singer John Wesley Harding came in one time, and he was a dick. I knew who he was. He's like, you don't know who I am. I'm like, fuck you. Anyway, so Jimmy Snuka comes in, and I, you know, I'm trying not to bug him, but you know, back then I didn't have the ability to filter myself, so I just sort of, you know, was asking him questions about wrestling and how's he doing. You look great, champ, or whatever you called him. You know, he was awesome, but he was very nice. And I think that was a Friday, and then late Sunday afternoon, he came back. Fresh scars on his head, again, smoking, chain smoking through the whole meal. And I said, how'd you do? And he goes, oh, they beat me up pretty bad, brother. You know, he called me brother all the time. Probably annoying the shit out of him. Maybe like if a 10-year-old kid had come up to him, you know, 10 years prior to that, and just started bugging the shit out of him, asking him questions. Well, I was a 20, how old was I? 24. Hey, how you doing, man? You're my favorite wrestler of all time. I might have been 25, but same thing. But he was a cool dude. Superstar. I never met superstar Billy Graham. But Jimmy Snuka, may he rest in peace, was one of my favorite wrestlers. Anyway, another one of my favorite wrestlers from that era was the Iron Sheik. And this book by, I got to look at the name because it's Armenian and it's going to be tough for me to say. So, Baluchian. Brad Baluchian, it's called The Six Pack, On the Open Road in Search of WrestleMania, tracking down some of the people that were there the night that Iron Sheik got put over, was able to defeat Bob Backlund. And then, you know, this was all done, by the way, right after Vince McMahon and his wife took over the WWE from Vince McMahon Sr. And you learn an awful lot of stuff. You know, I've watched countless documentaries about the WWF and the WWE or whatever, and the NWA and the AWA. I watch all those shows on Vice, The Dark Side of Wrestling, all the A&E, WWE-produced documentaries about some of these guys. And I'm amazed that you can still learn things, because from Brad's book, I learned some stuff about McMahon that I didn't know. I learned some stuff about Tony Atlas. Like, everything he said about Tony Atlas, other than who he was new to me. And I'm not quite finished with the book, but, you know, you don't really need to be when you're interviewing. It's good to have read the book. I had to get the audiobook, which he narrates. And the cool thing I noticed about when he narrates is that he does slight impressions of the people. Speaking of narrating a book, my cousin asked me to – my cousin's an author. His mom was an author too. They've written tons and tons of books. His mom wrote a whole bunch. And, you know, they're very closely related to the McNaney side of my family. That's my mom's family. And Scott Young, he's written a book. He's writing a series, a sci-fi series. So he asked me if I'd be interested in doing some of these characters. So, well, we're gonna do that. We're going to do that. Hopefully I'll be able to do it. I'm a little nervous. It does take a long time to do something like that. But, yeah, we'll see. I'll get to it. What else is going on? You know, I got that tree outside of my house. Oh, forget the tree. Oh, I'm going to talk about the stupid tree. The stupid tree that's outside my house. That anytime I go outside my house, I get smacked in the face by this stupid Bradford pear tree. It's disgusting. Now, when you go to Google, it says the tree's blooms typically have a strong, unpleasant aroma, which can be likened to rotting fish or puke. Uh-uh. It smells like jizz. It smells like jizz. Every guy knows what jizz smells like. Well, not every guy, but a lot of them do. Some even know what it tastes like. That's okay. Bradford pears stink. It's disgusting. It doesn't smell like pears. It doesn't give you pears. You can't eat it. And there's three or four of them right next to the house, and they just fucking reek. I can smell it now. I can smell it now. And I wish that they would all friggin' disappear. So last week on the Von Hessler Doctrine, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Monday was me and Autumn, and then the other people. Well, not the other people. Me, Autumn, and Greg. Tuesday, it was me, Jared, Autumn, and Greg. And then on Wednesday, it was me, Jared, and Autumn again. And then Thursday and Friday, Eric was back, and now he's back for good. But on Thursday and Friday night, we had to fill in for Shelley Winter. So I had a long-ass week of radio stuff. It was fun. But Friday night was the coolest. I've never done a full show here by myself. I did 1 hour by myself because the person they partnered me up with for a fill-in show didn't show up on time. So last Friday night, I did all this prep, and it's funny. I got a lot of good phone calls, and we did this interview with – I did the interview, a fake interview between Shelley Winter and Donald Trump that got a lot of good response, and it was a lot of fun. So I want to thank Shelley for letting me do that. Shelley's our night guy on WSB, and you could hear all the WSB stuff. 95.5 or 750 AM, 95.5 FM, 750 AM right here in the great city of Atlanta, in the state of Atlanta. And well, all over the East Coast at night, if it's clear, you can hear 750 AM. Or you can listen on your phone and it doesn't matter. The WSB radio app. Mm-hmm. And also, yeah, that's pretty much. Or the Von Hessler Doctrine is a podcast as well. Hey, you know, today is the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron hitting a classic home run 715 going past Babe Ruth, and remains to me the home run king. He is the home run king. There's no asterisk next to his name. Hank Aaron did not take steroids. In fact, when Hank Aaron started playing baseball, he batted cross-handed, which is not good for your arms. Could break your arms that way, but that's how he started until somebody showed him how to do it right. Barry Bonds hit the most home runs, but he took steroids. So I guess that doesn't count. Even though baseball let him and let him get away with it, and he hit 1,000 home runs in one season. They don't acknowledge him. You never hear his name. Nobody talks about him. It's like he didn't exist. I think that's a bunch of bullshit. But, you know, there you go. That's the way things are. That's the way things are these days, you know. things are what they are. And yeah, so this, that's what I wanted to talk about. So today is also the eclipse. The eclipse. There's an eclipse happening in about an hour and a half. They have all the military over near Philadelphia that came down from Rome, New York. I thought that Air Force base was closed when I was a little kid. You know, they were always training for a NATO war in Europe, in Western Europe. So the Air Force base that existed in Rome, New York, those jets would come down. Like, I don't know what they were. They were just, you know, jets. And sometimes they'd be, I swear to God, just barely over the house. Like, they'd do these bombing runs, and you could watch them come down. And they'd do the bombing, and then they'd shoot straight back up in the air. It was interesting. You know, you live in a small town in Pennsylvania. Really, the only things you see in the sky are planes that are flying over really high. Sometimes, if the wind was right, we had a place. There was a place in Elmira, New York, called, or Horseheads, New York, called Harris Hill. And they had those gliders. So, the, you know, the plane, a single-engine plane, would pull the glider with a tow chain and then let the tow go. And then the gliders would just zipping around. Zip, 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 zip. And they were cool to just to lay back and watch. They'd just spin around in circles. And sometimes they'd fly over our town. But they got the military. They got all these alerts. And people are on standby. And schools are out. What is happening? Listen, if you hear this podcast as the world ends, I am sorry that it's the last, that I'm the last voice you hear. But you made the choice. The world could end at any time. And as Jesus said, nobody will know. And he said it like that. He said, nobody will know. That's the impression that I have of him. Is that how he sounded? Oh, hello. No one will know how it ends. So I'm going to get back to doing the prep. Not a lot this week on Trambles. I have some stuff I'm working on, but I don't want to put it out until it's done. And then I'll put it out. By the way, the ending of Curb was fantastic. It was a very funny episode. I love that Jerry Seinfeld showed up. Spoiler alert! I didn't know about it. I hope I didn't ruin it for you, but I'm not going to edit that. I might put a beep on it. How about that? I had no idea he or she were going to be in the episode, and it was very good. I enjoyed it. It was a callback to the final episode of Seinfeld, and everybody kind of figured that out at the beginning of the year. And it was fun. So, all right, I'll talk to you next week. Don't forget, every single week, Radio Labyrinth is released on Saturday, so you can watch it on YouTube. And even if you're not a person who likes to watch the podcast on YouTube and you just listen, please go into the YouTube that you have and subscribe, and then just forget about it. You don't have to go back there. But if you subscribe, that gets our subscriber numbers up. And that's what we're trying to get. We're trying to get to 1,000, and we're so close, I can taste it. I can taste it. Yes. All right, time to get back to prepping. Y'all have a good week, and we'll talk to you Saturday, regular guys. I said regular guys. It ain't the regular guys, but it will be some regular people, fairly regular people, who eat a lot of fiber and, you know, empty their bowels in a regular fashion. You know, at least 6 times a day, like it says in the Bible. All right, talk to you later. Wait, I got to play the out. Oh, jeez, I'm always fucking up. Jeez, jeez. Ah. Oh, so, it's the Rug Bob Seger Show. Still the same. From the ultimate hits, Rock and Roll Never Forgets, Bob Seger. Well, on Trambles. Hey, we're still the same. I didn't hit the post. Here we go. Still the same.